This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
This is Edward October, and I'm here with my friend, Rollo, the devil doll. You see, I must explain. Like all demonic ventriloquist dummies, Rollo has a problem with swearing. Rollo, stop it. We're here to tell everyone that Our True Crime Podcast may not be appropriate for all listeners.
Because they're so filthy!
Rollo, it's not that. Jen and Cam would like us to remind everyone that they discuss subject matter that may be disturbing to some listeners, especially children.
Oh, your mother!
Listener discretion is advised.
Canada may be known as the friendliest country in the world, but make no mistake, it has some of the most shocking criminal cases too. My name is Christy and I host Canadian True Crime. I'm Australian, but I've been living in Canada for many years. Canadian True Crime takes a deep dive into some of Canada's most well-known cases, like the Ken and Barbie killers, Robert Picton the pig farmer, and many smaller cases you probably haven't heard of, but are just as fascinating. If you're looking for the facts of the case told in a narrative storytelling format with ambient music, you can find me on your favourite podcast app or social media just by searching for Canadian True Crime.
From the earliest British settlements on the shores of Virginia, to the treacherous swamps of Louisiana and the isolated mountains of Appalachia, the American South has a rich history filled with eerie legends and mysterious hauntings. Join me, Brandon Schecksnyder, as I journey into its underbelly, exploring these tales of loss and heartbreak, tortured souls and spirits of the past, documenting ghost stories and legends amidst rich soundscapes and an eerie original soundtrack that can only be found on my podcast, Southern Gothic.
All right, Jen, how are you? What's going on?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I hear we have some shout-outs.
We do have some shout-outs. Shall we start?
Yeah, just...
And, you know, it's been a while since we've done shout-outs, so if we've missed you, let us know. Send us a DM.
Hey, you miss me?
Yeah, and say, hey,
I ain't come on. Missing you at all.
Exactly. Krista, new listener. She's really close by to us. We love
Hi,
her.
Hi, Krista. You are right down the road. Highway, but sort of same thing.
Right. Yeah. And then there's Jess, who reached out to us via Facebook this morning.
Hi, Jess.
Hi, Jess. Glad you're listening.
Yay, thank you.
She's got a really cute puppy.
I know,
named
I saw
Diesel.
The puppy dog. Yeah. He's cute.
Also, Brienne. No. Or I think it's Brienne. Brienne, Brianna. She's been an awesome new listener since right before Christmas.
Yes. I don't know.
Also, big shout outs. I don't know if we've mentioned you before, but Mary. Mary's always
Mary.
There for us. We dig Mary. And Dave Lee. Dave Lee, he's from England.
Can you hear us right now? It's because of Dave Lee.
It is. He's helped us with our audio. God bless
if you
Dave
can
Lee.
See that it's kind of sounding a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like we're not in a tunnel or
he's helped.
Far away.
He actually was so kind and he reached out to us and he helped where many people have failed.
They've tried, but
everybody's tried. Lord knows they've tried.
What is the hardest thing about podcasting?
Audio.
Totally.
Totally.
Sound, getting it. Oh my gosh.
Totally hard.
Terrible. Like you.
Pretty much. And then also, huge, huge shout out to our brand new friend, Donald.
Hi, Donald.
He is at Humani Machina. And he is designing all our new merch.
Swag.
Our swags. Yeah. Swags. Swag.
Swag. I come from the old days where we said that. Now they say merch.
Merch.
Yeah. The kids say merch.
Well, swag is now a walk, right?
Well, yeah, but swag used to be like, what kind of swag we getting?
Right. But anyway, he's working on, we should be getting our regular t-shirts. We're going to have a few that we're going to give away, and then we're going to put some up for sale. How we're going to do that? I don't know. We haven't thought that through, because why?
Stay tuned next January. We might have that worked out.
Cam and I never think things through. We just jump in.
We do. Took us 6 months, but I think we're getting the audio finally. So, you know, I was pretty impressed that we made it that far. Let's be honest.
So it's Friday night. Cam came over. We're supposed to get a big snowstorm. Camille's here now. We got a beer. We're recording.
We have a beer because we are celebrating what?
Friday night.
And you're the one.
Do you have something in your contacts?
You're the one that wanted to open the bottle of champagne. I said, no way.
We hit 30,000 downloads. That's Isn't that crazy. Amazing?
That is crazy.
I mean, we only did it because of our listeners, so thank you very much. I mean, unless our moms are downloading the same things over and over again. Hey, thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you so much for making us hit that milestone.
It's huge.
It is huge.
I heard a little birdie told me you've got a little Southern mystery.
I do. I do have a little, it's a little story for you. So the American South has long had its reputation here in the United States. It's seen its share of controversy with the fight for civil rights and small town politics. You know, officers of the law who often thought they were above the law. It's late 1960s in Gaffney, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. There's my accent. And this community is struggling with everything around the United States, especially in the South, that the other small communities were dealing with. But this town was about to get another problem that no one wants. Gaffney, South Carolina, March 1st, 1967. A nice couple who liked to go out, perhaps drink a little bit too much, went to a local bar to throw a few back and relax. We all know that drinking and coupling don't necessarily mix well, or I know that.
Coupling?
Yeah, being a couple.
Oh, drinking and being a couple. Okay.
No.
Okay.
So after a few drinks, Annie, Lucille, Dedman, and her husband get into an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Never saw that coming, right? So angry, Annie Dedman marched off and then eventually took off, stranding her husband, Roger, outside a donut shop in Gaffney. Now, Annie seemed to do this a lot, so Roger wasn't really concerned. The next morning, things would drastically change for the couple. Annie Dedman had been found dead in the center of the highway between the towns of Union, South Carolina, and Spindale, North Carolina. Who's always the first suspect? We always know.
Because they are usually the ones that do it.
So the police decided that Roger was, in fact, the killer, and the jury chose to agree, despite the fact that he clung to his innocence, maintaining that he had absolutely nothing to do with killing his wife. Although, they all say that, right? He was sentenced to 18 years and sent off to Union County Prison Camp. Perhaps this would be the end of the story, but if it was, would we have a podcast?
No, it'd be a really short one.
And that'd be it. Thank you for joining us. Woo! You know how to catch us. Twitter, right?
Love ya.
So 2 months later, a bizarre phone call would change the course of the Dedman murder and sadly change a few more lives in the process. February 8th, 1968, the managing editor of a local newspaper, the Gaffney Ledger, Bill Gibbons, received a phone call. The caller instructed Gibbons to gather three pieces of paper and label them number one, number two, and number three. The caller then gave Gibbons a series of detailed instructions. Number one, Nancy Christine, with a set of directions, including a street, and the phrase, quote, pile of brush, end quote. That was it. Number two, Nancy Carol Paris, downstream, near Ford Road Bridge, in the water, on the downhill side, you will find a body. That's it. Number three, Annie Louise Dedman, Jerusalem Road, 1967. So Bill Gibbons was unconvinced, but he went ahead and went to the police station and passed on the information to them. He thought that the information was very detailed to be just a prank, but he also wasn't sure because it was so obscure. The last thing the caller mentioned was to not go along, but to take a deputy with him. So the caller told Bill Gibbons, do not go alone to these sites I gave you. Make sure you take a deputy with you.
Right. That's smart.
And that was the last thing the caller said. Very bizarre. So Bill Gibbons and the police followed the instructions and discovered a nude female form near the bridge. It was 26-year-old Nancy Paris. She had been missing for one day, having last been seen walking her poodle. She was nude and tummy down with her legs slightly separated. When the police went in to get a closer look, you could see the red strangulation mark around her neck, and on her back were cigarette burns. The authorities now know this was no prank. The police are shocked about why the killer would be contacting the press rather than the police. Because, you see, this was almost a year before the Zodiac Killer, and the Zodiac Killer was famous for his correspondence with the newspapers, remember?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this was kind of a big deal. Immediately, the police are kind of getting suspicious and wondering, like, what's the game here? What's the plan? The poodle, the dog, nowhere to be found. That comes into play later. So after finding the first body, they knew they were in trouble. So more officers arrived. They went to the second location looking for the brush pile that the killer had mentioned. Soon they discovered a small foot sticking out from beneath a brush pile. It was 14-year-old Nancy Reinhardt. Now, Nancy had been missing for 10 days. Her body, too, had cigarette burns, and she also had been strangled. The weird part about this is the caller identified her as Nancy Christine. Well, she had been going by the name Tina, so the police didn't automatically know that Nancy Christine was actually this missing teen, Tina. It took them a while to catch on to that. It was the same person, but the caller identified her as her proper birth name,
right,
with no last name versus Tina. Third note, it was different than the other two. It had mentioned Jerusalem Road, which was located in the neighboring Union County. So the police had to head back to the station and call the Union County deputies. Now, deputies were well aware of this location and that it was where, in fact, Deadman had been found just 6 months earlier. Her body was found just as the previous two, undressed and strangled. But her killer, as they thought, was already sitting in jail for her murder because it was her husband. If he was in jail, there's no way he could have committed these extra two that had just happened.
Exactly.
Was there a second murderer out there? They didn't know.
Maybe there was just one murderer and the other guy's innocent.
The police now knew that they needed help, right? So they called the state police. Gaffney, South Carolina is a pretty small town. Still is today, by the way. So the town of Gaffney was freaking out, obviously. This is a small, quiet town. Phone calls of sightings and people reporting that their family member might be the killer or that their neighbor's acting strange started coming into the station nonstop. A phone call came into the station stating that he had been at the bridge that previous night and he believed he may have seen the killer, and he described the car in detail. So police were a little bit confused as to why this person would come forward with this information about seeing somebody on the bridge and identifying their car 2 full days after witnessing a stranger at the bridge, knowing that the police had put all this information out there, right? So they pushed and they pushed and they revealed that he wasn't exactly out there by himself. Wink, wink. And not with his wife.
Ooh.
Wink, wink. So pressure was on everyone, but Mr. Gibbons was receiving it from the town, the police, and the killer. All the eyes were on him. All ears were on him. Police put a trace on his phone at the newspaper. And, you know, Gibbons, obviously, managing editor of this paper, he was none too happy. But, you know, police are wondering, why are you calling a managing editor of the small town? Like, why aren't you calling somebody else? Suspicions started to heighten within the police department. Why would he be contacting Gibbons in the first place? Maybe Gibbons knew a little something more than he was saying. However, it wouldn't be too long before a phone call came in. But guess what? It wasn't the office phone that they had tapped. It was his home phone.
Ooh, really?
So what's that going to do?
Not any good.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
More suspicion, right? So it's February 12th, 1968, and Bill Gibbons would receive another ominous phone call. The deep male voice threatened, "If you don't catch me, there will be more death." Gibbons tried his best to keep him on the line and also tried to talk him into turning himself in. The voice simply stated, "It's no use. I'm a psycho. I'll get the chair. They'll have to shoot me like the dog I am. The only reason I'm telling you all this is to get that other boy out of prison. He's serving my sentence."
Wow. Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Gibbons took notes on a brown paper bag, and the notes contained a lot of details. Police went to Gibbons' house and demanded to know just how the killer would know to call him at home, and how could the killer know that the office phone was tapped? So Gibbons is kind of freaking out. You know, he's like, I don't know. I didn't do this. I didn't sign up for this. I have no idea.
I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I got no privacy.
Whoa, whoa.
Could that be it?
Could be.
Or they're hiding in the ceiling.
Yeah. As police were at Gibbons' house and they're questioning him, guess what?
What?
Phone rings.
Ring, ring.
It's the killer. So they're right there. The police are there, right? So they're seeing that he's not...
Right.
No connection. He said he'd called back to provide a few more details about Annie Dedman's clothing the day that she went missing, as well as to remind Gibbons that the police were too stupid to catch him and he'd be striking again. The very next day, on February 13th, 1968, Opal Buxom, 15, was on her way to the school bus stop with her brother and her sister. The school bus stop was about a quarter mile from her home. Opal was walking quickly, faster than her brother and sister. You know how that goes. And she was about 50 yards in front of her siblings as they were, you know, trailing behind, kind of chatting away. Her sister Gracie would later recall a car pulled over, grabbed Opal, threw her in the trunk of his blue sedan. Both the girls were screaming, and their brother ran for home to get their dad, Emmanuel Buxom. Unfortunately, the man closed the trunk and drove off just as Mr. Buxom ran out of the house, only to see Opal's school book spilled all over the road. How heartbreaking
baby.
Is that?
That poor father. And the brother?
And the sister?
That's something I don't think you'd ever get over.
That sight? No way. So, Jen, this was the South in the late 1960s. Like many towns during that time, they were often divided by where you lived and, sadly, the color of your skin. The three murdered women so far had all been white, but the killer changed his victimology, his victim type, with the abduction of this young teen, Opal. Opal was black. Now, this was also different because when it happened, they had actually had witnesses. The siblings had seen him. They had a description of him and the car. They described him as a white male in his 30s, and they had a pretty good description of the car. Police immediately gathered the town. They asked for help. The town came together. They all paired up and they went searching. They were very much hoping to find her alive because this was like moments, you know, like he had just driven away. So two volunteers were cruising around and they'd soon come across who would later be the killer himself. Lester Skinner and Henry Transo. Now, one's a game warden and one's a golf pro. I can't make that up. I love that. So they buddied up and they're out there.
Seems like a good pair.
Right. They're out there perusing the country roads, these dirt roads, looking for people. So they make a turn onto this dirt road. And this is like in the middle of, you know, the deep South, whatever. Very bumpy. And as they do, they see a man who fits the description.
Oh, good.
He's walking to a car that seems to be parked in the middle of nowhere. And this car also fits the description.
Bingo.
The two men find a place to turn around, and as they do, the car pulls out in front of them. They take out paper and they write down the license plate. They follow the car as it pulls into a driveway. Bam! They have their man. They have their killer. He just pulled into his house.
Ooh, good.
Do you think that's really what happened?
No.
Of course not.
But it sounds good.
So the men take the information to the police, who then immediately get everybody together. Woo, woo, woo. They go to the house, guns drawn, demanding the occupants come out with their hands up. Man comes to the door. It's not the man they saw. The police then ask the man who found the car in the woods if he can take them to the location. They comply, the two guys. Turns out it's not the man they saw.
Right.
So he has no, the man who answers the door has no idea who they're talking about.
Did they see, they didn't see the man go in the house,
no.
did they? They
no.
just saw him pull in.
Yes, and that's what he did. So that's exactly what happened.
Amateurs.
So the police then asked the two men that were out on the dirt road if they could take them back to the woods because they wanted to search that area. And there's no sign of Opal. The police return to the station and they go about looking for the license plate number that the men had scribbled on a paper as they were following the man out of the woods,
smart.
Right? The plates were traced to Leroy Martin, age 30. Now on the surface, Leroy seemed like an unlikely suspect. They all do. He...
Quiet type.
Yeah, quiet type, right?
Kept to himself.
He was married. He had
Very
three children.
Deacon in the church.
He worked at the local mill. The only thing that was kind of odd is that he had been arrested previously, 10 years ago, for assaulting a teenage girl.
Sexually assaulting or
just assaulted? Everybody that knew him seemed to like him. You know, they said he was a family man. police started watching him and watching every move he made. They actually went and pulled his work time cards, and they discovered that every time one of the victims went missing, he wasn't at work. Shocker. So police continued to watch him rather than to immediately arrest him because they just have, you know, the two guys' description of him. They were actually hoping that he might return to Opal if he had, in fact, killed her, or if she was alive, they'd be able to locate her. It was on one of these late night missions that Mr. Martin would do something peculiar.
Like everything else isn't that he's done.
He came outside his house and began to wash his car inside and out.
Oh.
In the dark. In the middle of the night.
Huh.
It was after midnight.
That is a bit
peculiar. He's washing his car. It had been 5 days since Opal had went missing. So the police officers were literally watching him wash away the evidence, the only evidence that they could possibly have had that Opal was in his car, which she was. The police gathered the next day, and they decided to go back to the woods once again and search the location where the two men had seen him. During the search, peeking out from beneath a pile of ground covering lay the body of Opal. The police knew immediately that they had the guy and they needed to go arrest him before he could do it again. Guy's a piece of work. The police go and they arrest Leroy Martin for the murder of these four women. At this point, police knew that he was the strangler, or at least suspected, but they needed the proof. They didn't have any hard evidence. They knew he did it. They had people that could kind of point him out.
Right.
But they didn't have any hard evidence. And this is where people are smart. I love it. So the one thing that police did know for sure about Mr. Martin...
He was a clean freak that had cleaned his car in the middle of the night.
With a full moon. But what else? What did those phone calls say? Like, what is that?
He wants to take all the credit for everything.
Yes, exactly. With all those phone calls to Gibbons, the way he wanted those girls found, the attention to detail that he put in it, the details that he gave the cops, all that stuff, the police knew one thing, and that was that he wanted attention. He liked the attention. He liked to claim what he did,
exactly.
Right? Just like a toddler throwing a fit on the ground at Target, that would be my child when he was little.
Oh, mine did too.
What better way to drive an attention-seeking person insane than to simply ignore him? So they did. They wouldn't talk to him. He's in the back of the car trying to make small talk.
With the police?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he wanted that attention, right? Mm-hmm. He wanted it. So they continued to ignore him. Guess what? It works. Martin started talking, wouldn't shut up. He explained how the first kill was the most difficult, but it was also the easiest, and that was Annie Dedman. So Martin started talking, and he wouldn't shut up. He explained how the first kill was the most difficult, but it was also the easiest, and it was Annie Dedman. He said he did them all the same with his belt, meaning he strangled them all with his belt. He said he stopped her because she was erratically driving down the road, because this was after a fight with her husband, remember?
And she'd
been drinking. He says that he had been following the couple since they had left for the nightclub that evening. So he kind of liked to stalk out these people. When they continued on asking about the other people that he had murdered, this is where Kimmy might need to turn off. So Mr. Martin continued on to describe details that only he could know. For instance, the police officers asked about the poodle. The poodle's name was Juniper. Remember Juniper? Aww. He told her, which was Nancy
Grace?
Oh, he told Nancy Paris that the dog had escaped and that he would help her. He was going to go get the dog. He would get the dog, bring the dog back, right?
Nice guy.
Told her not to worry. He's going to bring back the dog. So then he came back to her and he said he saw the dog. Dog was too fast and the dog got away. But what he really did was choke the dog. He killed the dog immediately and then went back to her
Poor
and lied.
Juniper.
So during all this talking, giving all these details about things that, you know, now mind you, this was, I would say, a more innocent time. Not that this didn't occur, but it was a different time in history. It was a little bit more, I guess, probably police kept things a little bit more secret, if you will. So during all this talking, he admitted to something that the police did not realize. They had no idea that this would happen. And it would actually make them and everybody else really realize how evil this married father of three could be. As if killing these young women wasn't bad enough.
And the dog.
Martin admitted that over the course of 7 to 8 days, he would return to Reinhardt's body and sexually molest her. He also admitted to visiting the other bodies for the same reason. So police believe that the strangulation actually occurred while he was first molesting them and he became too aroused.
Overzealous.
Mm-hmm. And he ended up murdering them. Now, in the end, he probably was going to do that anyway, but it, knowing his psychopathy, I guess, that he would prefer to prolong this, and he just got so excited and killed them. While this is really beyond comprehension for us as humans or, you know, people that have compassion, there was another detail that came out, and to me, I think it was even worse. He admitted that he went to the funeral service of Nancy Christine Reinhardt. Now, that was the little girl that was kind of his favorite, the one he visited for 7 to 8 days.
Right.
And he actually, no, that's the teenager. This is, there was two of them named Nancy. This was the teenager, the young girl. She was 15.
Ugh, yuck.
So he went to her funeral, and then he actually gave sympathies and hugged the family.
Oh, and, that's bizarre.
Right? Like, I think that that's just the worst. So Martin went to trial, and he was given a life sentence for each of the lives he took. He didn't last long in prison.
Go figure.
Sometimes that's a good thing. 3 years in his 4 life sentences, Martin was stabbed to death by a fellow inmate. Martin maintained he was not the one that killed these women. Uh-huh. He claims he heard voices from someone else who made him kill them. So really, he didn't do it.
Okay.
Roger Dedman, who was the husband of Annie Dedman, was actually released in 1969. He had served almost a year for that crime. He's been there for a while, which is kind of weird that Leroy Martin would come forth wanting, that was part of the reason that he wanted, I think he wanted the attention, but he did say that he wanted that person that's serving the sentence to be out.
He wanted, right. He was innocent. He didn't have to serve.
And a last little final footnote here. And I knew this, but I had no idea this was the same person. So you may or may not know this. And listeners may or might not know this, but there's a famous autopsy photo, and it was always been referred to as the smiling killer. It's an autopsy photo of this guy, and in the photo, he literally looks like he's smiling. He's laying on the autopsy table, and it's Leroy Martin. Now, I knew the photo.
I
knew
the
story of the smiling autopsy photo, the smiling killer. I didn't put it together. I didn't know it until the end of the story, and I'm like, holy moly.
Huh.
So we'll put that online, because it is bizarre, and I'm sure it's just muscles or whatever, but he does look like, it's a smirk kind of, you right. know.
Who killed him in prison, do you know?
He was just stabbed by a fellow inmate.
Hmm. Wow. No, I'd never heard of the Gaffney killer.
You say that every single episode at the end, swear to God you do.
What? Wow.
Huh, that's interesting. I've never heard of him. You say that every time.
Okay. Then I won't say anything.
No, but I just noticed that. I started notice, but we say the same thing. Wow. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
That's why I tried to be quiet and not say.
No, I know. I tried that the last time too, but sometimes it's hard. I know that sometimes podcasters or other people, they feel like we're making light of the situation, and that is not at all. Sometimes it's shocking. Actually, most of the time, you and I don't know the other story till we sit right here.
Right.
So when the listeners hear it, that's when we hear it. So sometimes the shock and awe and disgust, I mean, it's especially like some of the really morbid, terrible details. I want your reaction. I want you to react like as if you and I are just chatting.
Right.
Because that's, it's, as a person that hears this, this is not okay. It's not
okay.
It's not funny. It's terrible. And so we would never make fun of that. It's just, sometimes it's just kind of, frankly, it's hard to get. It's hard to acknowledge that this could happen. It's hard to understand how somebody can be like this, you know? Anyway, so that's the story of the Gaffney Strangler. Do you want to tell the good people how they can find us?
If you want to get in touch with us, you can check us out on Twitter. Our handle is @OurTrueCrimePod. We are also on Facebook. You can like us, start conversations on there, although nobody ever does. Come on, people, let's get it going. We have a blog, ourtruecrimepodcast.com.
So anyway, you guys know where to hit us up. If you want to check out the episode before this one or the episode after, and you can get the info. Otherwise, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Today's episode is brought to you by Shock Top.
And it's Friday.
It is Friday.
We never do that anymore.
Friday night.
Friday night. Feeling all right.
Thank God it's Friday. Friday. Friday.
It's terrible. We're gonna bring it back in.
Reel it in.
Stop it.
Whatever.
Focus.
Rainy days and you always bring me down.
Oh, well. At least. Never mind.
What? I go down?
Yes, yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Honey, how do you think I got these diamonds? Come on.
Did you hear that? That nice swallow of...
1-800-CAM-SWALLOWS.
Oh, okay, you went there. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
No,
we can cut it out. No, go. No.
No.
No, you.
No.
I'm not saying anything.
Nope, go ahead.
Nope.
I'll wait.
Me too.
Sure, podcast. I'm just sitting here.
Time keeps on slipping.
Time after time.
Into the future.
Hey, buddy. Have you got the time? Okay, that's it. Go.
No. Say.
No, I was going to say that. I was going to say we're going to have a very special. I asked you if I could do this in a southern accent.
I said yes.
Yeah, and I tried it. And I said, what do you think? And you said no.
No, I said, go ahead.
Yeah, but then I said, do you think that sounds good? Do you think it sounds like a southern accent? And you said,
no, but go ahead and do it. You're awesome at thinking you can do
accents.
I know. That's, and God love you.
I want to be somebody else.
God love you with your trying.
I know, sure.
Bless your heart. Just do it. And then, hey.
Absolutely not. Now I can't. Now I'm all self-conscious about it. I can't do it.
Well, get over that.
Gee, I wonder why I'm self-conscious about certain things. Jen.
I don't know.
Listeners have these new mics, and Jen's like, now we can see each other better, right? Because it, a lot of the apparatuses.
Yeah, so it's not like in our eyes. It's
so now when
like
somebody's
right at
staring
mouth.
At me and being mean to me, like right now.
I'm not being mean to you. I'm not doing anything.
Okay, whatever. You want to hear my story?
I guess. Look at you.
No, you can look at me, but I need you to listen.
I am.
No, I'm just saying. I just need you to listen. Okay,
are you doing the accent?
No, because now I can't. I practiced this with my accent today, too.
Then do it.
No, absolutely not. I have to have confidence, and I need support, Jen.
You sounded absolutely fan-fucking-tastic.
No, you said no.
You did.
No. Ready?
I thought you asked a different question.
No, you didn't.
That's why I answered
you
no.
Big liar. Your pants are on fire. So, give me the lead-in. I got a story.
Hey, Camille, I heard you got a story.
I do. I'm going to tell you a little story. And
about a man named Jed?
About a man named Jed.
Poor
he was just a poor mountaineer.
He barely kept his family fed.
And then one day...
he was shooting at some food.
And up through the ground...
came a bubbling crude.
Black tea.
Oil.
No, Texas gold. Black tea.
Texas gold. Tea.
Texas tea.
Black gold.
Gold. There we go.
Texas tea. Son, let me tell you about a man named Jed. Pulled Deli May down on a feather bed. Stripped off panties and pulled out his worm, and out came the worm, come the bubbling sperm.
Oh my god, that's terrible. Where'd you get it from?
I don't know, I've known it for like ever, I think.
Do you remember, see, this is why we get sidetracked. We cannot drink beer and do this, because I get sidetracked. Do you remember two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, tomato, and do you remember the...
two all beef patties, special Ross Lester Reese picking bunions on a sesame seed bus?
How did you know that? I had to Google that. I had to Google that the other day, because I was like, that is freaking ingenious.
Mm-hmm. No, I remember the joke.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
So the American South has long had its reputation here in the United States.
Reputation?
Okay, see, I'm getting, because I'm looking at you. You know what? I can't even look at you. Maybe I like that apparatus in front of us better. It's funny. Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
You can look at me, but just come on.
I got kind of. Yeah, we're almost on 15 minutes.
I know, right? Okay. Dumb.
Is Kimmy going to have to turn this off?
It's not. I mean, yeah, but it's like one sentence.
Okay. Sorry, Kimmy. Okay. You're not Kimmy. I said, sorry, Kimmy, not Cammy.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
For assaulting a teenage girl.
Sexually assaulting or
just assaulted?
He was assaulted.
Nuts. Everybody that.
Annie was the first kill?
Yeah, that was the one 6 months ago. Remember the girl that got in a fight? Yes. She was way before. Annie was way before.
I was confused because of...
you were on your phone. No, you were. But that's the point. That's why I need you to listen, because then you go all shocked. And
no, because like, she was found...
she was,
okay, I was just confused.
6 months before.
The beer. Right.
Not the beer. You were on your phone. Okay, listen. I got to start.
Because the third call was about Annie Desmond. The first call was about somebody...
No. Yeah. Made one call and gave three details.
Okay, the three details.
And
the third detail was
Annie. And
that's why I thought it was in
And it
order.
Gave a year, though. It gave a year, 1967, because it was 6 months prior to the other two, because the other two were killed back to back.
Well, then I was confused.
I'm always confused. So he also started describing details of which only the killer
can you
down the road.
Is that the new canoe?
Can you believe it? Okay, sorry.
I love a good GNU canoe. You didn't say the name, but...
Till just now, Jen.
I know.
I just said it.
But I do remember the poodle.
So Nancy Paris had gotten in a little fight with her husband, and she grabbed the dog and said, I'm taking a walk, okay? So the police
did she say okay?
What?
I'm taking a walk, okay? Is that what she said? Or did you add that on for drama?
So the police asked about Juniper the poodle. They wanted to know what happened to the dog. So he told them that the dog... Okay, stop it! Jesus! I can't even get this out. So the police had asked about the dog, Juniper. They wanted to know what happened to the dog. So he proceeds
to... the poodle, right?
Yes. I fucking hate you! Yeah, you think this is all funny? Wait till you get on yours. You just
Oh, it's
going
to be hell.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
You just wait.
I'm going to sit here, drink my little beer, make fun of you.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. It'll be a good episode.
Take 535.
It's not my fault.
Yes, it is your fault when you're singing Juniper.
Hey.
Police believe, in hindsight, that the strangulation actually occurred. Police believe that the strangulation actually occurred. It cured. Oh, my God.
I didn't say anything.
I know. It's me. Stop it. Yeah, so that's it, Jen. That's the
wow. I'd never heard of that one before.
Have you heard of the Gaffney Strangler?
I have not heard of the Gaffney Strangler.
I didn't know if you'd heard of the Gaffney Strangler.
Is it Gaffney Strangler?
It's Gaffney Strangler.
I've never heard of that one before.
Wow. Yeah, there you go.
Wow. You know what I've never heard of?
What?
The Gaffney Strangler.
Wow.
I know. Just read about it.
Oh Lord, we still have another one of these to go.
We do, and you know what? It's even better because I haven't even didn't even write it down.
That's why I wanted to do mine first because I wanted it out of the way. And that was hard enough to get through after.
Well, it's an hour.
Two beers.
We got an hour.